to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please contact us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about fear. And a lot of us don't really accept that we have any fears, but we all do. And we're going to be talking about them within our context, of course. Within the context of an alternative dispute resolution, a mediation, a negotiation, a workshop, a seminar, what kind of fears do we see within that context? Within the context of bringing people together with a group dynamic so that they can reach a successful outcome. What kind of fears do we encounter, and what should we do about them? Because we are, of course, a practical show, and we like talking about theory as much as the other person, but we want to know what to do about it. We don't just talk about, well, maybe this and maybe that. No, we're going to find out what to do and how to alleviate the fear and get people to work together towards consensus and a negotiated successful outcome. Yeah, so we can get on with our lives, really. Or we can go on to the next issues. You know, sometimes we get a group. In fact, I have this with some frequency. Sometimes there's a group and they get together for a certain issue. Oftentimes a political one or a work-related one, like a union issue or a work-related issue, an employment benefit issue. I do a lot of contract work. And they really find out that they work well together, that they make a good team by the end of whatever it is we got together for. By the time we reach our successful outcome, we're a successful team. We're a successful group. And it's a shame to disband. Yeah. And so we take on another project, which is fabulous. Because we all work, we understand how to work well together, and we are oftentimes, and I say we, because the leader is also a team member, right? Yeah, I consider myself part of the team, just the one that leads it through the process and helps people to understand where their common interests lie. But I'm a team member, too, as leader, and we often see that that's successful, and we also, and then we tackle different issues that are oftentimes related, and really go further towards, well, changing something, making something go into existence, right? Yeah, yes. Yes, this is true. A lot of people are saying that they have that too. Fabulous. We're all fantastic leaders. And a lot of times it starts in as a kind of an internal team, right? An internal group that comes perhaps from an organization or from, I deal a lot with multinationals, with multinational corporations. And you get an internal team together. They are seem like they're very dissimilar when they start, but that's good because they bring different strengths to the table. And as leader, you show them that, and then they go forward. Yes, fabulous. And it is a delight. But when they finish effectuating whatever kind of successful outcome, I'm going to say oftentimes it's change, in the organization, then they reach out towards, well, the world, really, and towards other organizations. You know what I mean? They reach further. They take the next step up because they say, look how well that worked. Look how much better it is. Whatever it is, and wow, wouldn't it be good if others knew about it? If we could expand this? If we could, well, fill in the blanks, right? Yeah. And so that's a very valuable thing. And a lot of times they have overcome their fears. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so let's talk about what kind of fears we've got within our context. Mm-hmm. Yes, and we have lots of participation. Thank you all for being here. Yes, thank you. Thank you for listening. Welcome to everyone. Welcome to the new people. Please come again. Everybody come again. Yes. I think the number one fear that I'm seeing, let's all vote. I think the number one that people are talking about is, I'm going to call it fear of the other participants. Yeah, fear of the other participants. We're going into a group, and the other people kind of we're not so sure about. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of reticent, and we're kind of scared of them. Yeah. And maybe not, there's no kind of involved. Yeah, people are saying sometimes you actually know the other participants or know them by reputation, and you are fearful of dealing with them. Yeah, uh-huh. Lee and others are talking about preconceived notions. Mm-hmm. And we've actually had shows on that. They are archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All the shows, I think, from day one are archived, and believe me, that's a lot of them. But the titles are always pretty explanatory of what we're talking about. And a preconceived notion is when you go in to deal with someone or into a situation, and you have a real set idea of what's going to happen, mm-hmm. of how this type of person will react, how this type of situation will be resolved. Mm-hmm. And as leaders, of course, we try to be very aware of our own preconceived notions. We've all got them, right? We're human beings, too. And a lot of our preconceived notions are not, I hope by now, bigotry in any way. But they come from dealing with this kind of situation before, right? Yeah, I've got some preconceived notions due to experience, right? I've dealt maybe with these people before. Mm-hmm. So you have kind of an idea going in, and you have to be very careful that you don't let it impact the situation, because this isn't the same. And the people might have changed their mind or might have a different opinion in this specific situation. Every time it's different. That's what keeps it interesting. Yeah. Uh-huh. And every time is, you have to go in with a fresh eyes, with a fresh mind. Mm-hmm. And it is true that you get kind of expertise in certain areas, and you get called in on those areas because clients, employers, have a preconceived notion, basically, of what it is that you do. So you have to explain to them that you do one of everything, and because it keeps it interesting. But you do see the same types of problems kind of recurring. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of contract law, and contracts have very similar phrases at the bottom that talk about alternative dispute resolution before court, right? And, yeah, and you do go in with an idea, but you got to remember that it can't be a preconceived notion, because that's hard to change. It's just an idea based on experience, but you got to have an open mind, right? Yes. And your participants have preconceived notions, too. Notions about how different kinds of people react, for example. Yeah. And they fear, on the basis of a preconceived notion that has nothing to do with the actual situation or the actual participants. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when we introduce ourselves and we have the introduction, we say why we're here. I'm very big on having people say things about themselves and about why they're there and what they hope to accomplish, right? Because it tells me as leader, but it's interesting to everyone, people are coming from, not physically, but mentally, emotionally, psychologically, right? And that gives me an idea that something needs to be handled, needs to be diffused, need to understand that we are all delighted to be here, and we are going to reach consensus and work towards a successful outcome. And even if we're not delighted to be here, that might even be a faster successful outcome. Yeah, because you explain things to your participants, don't you, as leader? Yes. And one of the things I usually explain is that the faster we settle this and go on, the faster we're done. Mm-hmm. Because some groups just, they don't, at the beginning of this show, I always say they'll have to be friends, just willing participants. You get those. Not friends, because they're just too different. Just don't like each other, basically speaking. But willing participants for this particular issue, for this particular group, at this particular time, so we can reach success, get it done, and move on. Yeah. And you'd be surprised, even if you've got that kind of a group, the next time, which is kind of a, people are calling it a hostile group dynamic. No, it's not hostile because you need to reach consensus and move on. You need to get to success and not quit because you just can't get along with the other people. No. Not hostile, but pragmatic, I usually think of it as, right? Very different, very there for different reasons, but want the same outcome. You got to be, you tell people you need to be pragmatic about it, right? And you'd be surprised when you have those groups, and I have them fairly regularly. I deal across all kinds of nationalities and things and traditional backgrounds and non-traditional backgrounds. And we all need to get to consensus because we all want the same outcome, just different reasons. And you'd be surprised. You can't make friends. Not your job. But the next time there's issues that come up that these same people need to deal with, they make a willing group, right? They make a willing team. They understand that they don't have fear anymore, is what it is. They're not scared of each other anymore. They understand that people are people. We need to get this done. This conclusion would benefit us all. Let's do it again. You see, fear is overcome the first time, and then we don't fear each other anymore, and we can just get on with it. Yeah. And in a way, that's even the most effective group, because there's no dilly-dallying. You know what I mean? They just, it's all business. Yep, here we go. Let's get this done. Let's make it stick. And let's go and lead our separate lives. I'll see you again if we have another issue that needs to be resolved. But see, that's the sentence. We don't fear each other anymore. We don't necessarily have to like each other, particularly. But we have to work together. The fear has been overcome. What other kind of fear of the other participants do we have? Lee and Paige and other people are talking about when the people in the group are of uneven stature. Yeah. Paige's uneven position. They're on different levels. It is usually occurs in a corporate environment when the people who are in the room are not all on the same level. Some are administration, for example, and some are more in the work department, right? They are uneven, and somebody in the room can impact somebody else's employment, right? You even get it in organizations. Somebody is deemed by the other people in the group to be more important. I don't know what deems them that. Sometimes it's professional. Someone's a doctor, they're a lawyer, they're an Indian chief, and the other people aren't. That makes them an expert. And a lot of times people feel less competent if someone in the group seems to be extremely competent and kind of overqualified, and they feel kind of underqualified. Yeah, they fear crossing the person. They fear not being on their good side because they want to be for the future, right? Yeah. And that's a fear, too, and it makes a funny group dynamic because it means that that individual has kind of taken control, kind of usurped the group in a way, right? Yeah. And it is important that everybody be equal in opinion and equal to be able to speak and move forward. Now, yeah, people are saying that it, because that's a real life thing when you leave the group, and it is, that you will have an uneven group dynamic no matter what you do. Because reality exists, right? We don't work in a vacuum. We don't just, you know, it's not a theory or something. We're not all wearing a bag over our head and we're anonymous. But they wouldn't be in the group if they didn't need to participate, if their opinion was not valued, and if they didn't need to do something. Yes, one of the things that happens sometimes, and Grady and others are talking about it, is that the person who is, I don't like to say of the higher level, but you know what I mean. The person who is perceived to be more important, has a higher position than some of the other people in the group, and especially if he or she has, what they deem to be equals. They've made kind of a little click there because they're all on one level and then the other people are kind of not, like more employee, employer, or leader, you know what I mean? And point, if you're not careful as a leader, and if you as leader do not assert your superiority over everybody in the room, because you're the leader, right? Yeah. We're the leader. We're the big dog in the room, right? Because we're the third party impartial, and we're going to get everybody to success, right? Yeah. If you don't assert that, you will have trouble down the line with bullying. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people are talking about bullying. Diane and Grady and others, that you can't have certain people in the group keep down other people in the group. Even if they're not, you think of bullying as somebody being overtly nasty, right? Like in a schoolyard. But by the time we get fairly high up in business and in life, I suppose, bullying isn't so overt. I mean, you don't get to the point where somebody's going to take a poke at somebody else or push them. Or, you know what I mean? We're not going to get to that point, for God's sake. But times you get towards bullying in a more insidious manner, and you can't stand for it. It won't fly with any group that any of us do, right? Right. That's why the civility rules are in place. Yes, thank you. We have tons of people talking about the civility rules. Thank you, yes. Recipe for Peace Now has very few rules. We say you get the group dynamic to work, right? Yeah. And then we get consensus, we negotiate, we reach a successful outcome. The only real rule, and it expands as needed, right? You might even need to write it down, depending on the group. The only rule that Recipe for Peace now has is the civility rules. And they say very simply, we will not be rude to anyone else. And you know what? That we includes us, the leader. Because we must be the shining example, the leader must be the shining example of that won't be tolerated. Because you don't want people to live in fear, right? And if you get bullied, you're scared to open your mouth. Yeah. And one of the ways we do that, of course, is to enforce the idea that everybody gets a turn, right? Yeah, those of you who've been here before know that I am fond of a timer in the room, right? We go around the group. Everybody gets however many minutes they need to talk, but everybody gets the same amount, 2 minutes. I set the timer, it goes tick, 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 ding, so that everybody knows they've had their fair amount because everybody thinks they got shortchanged. Mm-hmm. Civility rules. There will be no bullying. No one will fear walking into the room, fear that they're going to be judged, fear that they're going to be bullied, and that there's going to be, that they're going to have negative repercussions. Mm-mm. Now, the employees have to have civility also, as far as that goes. But we're interested in everybody's input, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. What other kind of fear of other participants do we have? Diane and a lot of other people are talking about different backgrounds and what I'm going to call beliefs, religious beliefs, traditional beliefs, beliefs that you didn't even come to. They kind of came to you through your family, your background, your experience. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I'm going to... A lot of people are talking about a fear of the other participants that's kind of deep-rooted and comes from beliefs the other, right? Not my type of person. Beliefs about the validity of other people's beliefs as opposed to mine. And whether or not how wrong they are. See, kind of a moral. I'm going to call all of that superstition. I am. Because it really borders on it, and sometimes it is, that you fear the other part. Somebody fears the other participants, or they fear each other, because of, like, superstition. Because of an ingrained belief. People call it bigotry. I guess so. But bigotry to me implies some sort of willingness. And sometimes people have a real visceral idea about something. I see this peculiarly enough, I guess it's not peculiar at all, because it's faith. I see this in very different religious backgrounds, right? I deal with a lot of people who need to reach consensus and have the same need for the same outcome, but they are from completely different backgrounds, and they have different religious beliefs that they are practicing. Because sometimes people come from religious background, but they're not practicing. And you have to acknowledge that elephant in the room, so to speak, and explain that it makes no difference because nobody's going to convert anybody else. We're not going to pray together. And we're people. We have pragmatic needs. This is a pragmatic need. Let's do it. Don't really, personality, faith doesn't apply. Now, this is interesting. I said just now that we're going to leave it out. We're going to leave out the superstitions, because it's not really faith. Faith is a belief in a higher being, right? The universe, God, whatever you believe in. But with that sometimes creates superstition about other people's beliefs that, honest to God, are usually unfounded, and what other people will do because of their beliefs. There's somewhat of a vilification in the United States of Muslims. Perfectly fine religion. I don't happen to practice it. But I don't have a superstition or a belief or a preconceived notion about people who do. It's their business. It's a religious belief. But participants fear each other because they fear the reaction of the person who is of a different faith towards them. Right? Right, yeah. And I said that we leave it out. Some of you actually bring it in. This is interesting. I've got quite a few people who have just disagreed with me, and that's fine. That's why we have these discussions. And they say that you bring in and you make, you do the circle thing where you hold hands and really acknowledge each other's validity in being and then go forward. I'm going to say it depends. It depends on your group. I suppose it somewhat depends on your leadership style. I don't usually have a group that would be effective for, right? And I truly feel that my job is not to fix my participants as people forever and ever. My job is to fix them enough for this specific purpose, for this specific group, for these specific issues. That's it. That's my job. That's what I do, right? Yeah. Other than that, I don't feel that I have a particular duty to do anything more than that, right? I'm not a psychiatrist. And they don't want me to fix them. It takes too much time. I'm a pragmatist, right? But if you can do it and you want to, I don't think it's a bad idea. So fear of each other. Remember that we also promote empathy. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily have to call it that to your participants. But remember that empathy is not agreement. It's understanding, right? I don't need to agree with you to empathize with you. I just need to understand where you're coming from, and we need to accommodate each other so we don't have fear, which blocks us from going forward. Yes, thank you. A lot of people are talking now about the 5 W's. And yes, that is one of the things that we're really big on at Recipe for Peace now. And I do it constantly, either in front of the group or during one of our timeouts, right? You have to make that judgment. The 5 W questions lead to empathy. Not agreement, understanding. And they're who, what, where, when, why. The 5 W's. Who, what, where, when, why. Then you know where that idea is coming from. What kind of a fear it is, who we fear, why, and we can bring it to the open so that we can set it aside and go forward. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised. There's fear all around, and we get rid of that right away, and we understand that in this particular time, we need to get together to get this done. Then we can leave. Yeah. Another kind of fear that people are saying, which I think is very valid, is fear of the leader. Yeah. We just talked about participant fear, but sometimes people fear the leader. Impacts the group dynamic and impacts how quickly and how successfully we're going to get to our outcome. Right? Yeah. Fear of the leader. Finn and others are talking about when the leader has an assessment that they make. You might be teaching a seminar workshop and give a grade, right? Mm-hmm. An assessment, a written assessment, an evaluation, people call it, yeah. And therefore, the participants fear you because they have Because if they are silent, they can't make a mistake. Yeah? So they're kind of scared to participate because they don't want you to think they're dumb or wrong or out of line, right? You must make it very clear that that is not a good idea and that you like all participation and it is all valued, and that even if you as a leader don't agree and that the group decides not to, it was a good idea. It was something that we needed to think about and to assess, yeah? And, yeah, your participants will fear you if you have power over them, right? And that makes you more, less of a team member in that way. I always make very clear, I lead by being the head team member, right? Now, that is a personal style. And sometimes, depending on the group, depending on the issues, depending on my relationship to them, whether they've chosen me, whether I've been chosen, you know what I mean, stuff like that. Sometimes you are more of a strict leader than others because you need to take the reins and lead them through the process. And I'm afraid that that will instill some fear in your participants. And you have to judge whether or not that's good for the group, because it's good for getting to your conclusion. Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, sometimes, yes, sometimes we rule by fear. No, not by fear, but sometimes we're more strict than others. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Raymond and others at Suki are talking about power to remove someone from the group, and they would like to stay because it's for a variety of reasons. It's good for them to be part of the group, right? And the power to affect their employment. Mm-hmm. The power to report them to a higher up, perhaps. To assess them poorly, mm-hmm. or assess them well. Yeah. This gives the leader inherent control, but you can't control by fear, or even though it's easy, because you won't get a good result. You won't get people truly working towards a successful outcome, truly thinking about alternatives. What you'll do is you'll get a very by-the-book, very bland result that doesn't reach success because it's been tried before and it didn't work before, but it's the program that everyone's comfortable with, and they just march down it because they don't want to get a bad report. No, we talk about this at the very beginning of our time together, and that I expect participation and I expect full cooperation and participation. And we're going to think about why in the past, because usually I've been brought in because something's not working, why in the past it hasn't worked, and what we're going to do to reach our successful outcome. Because that is non-negotiable. We're going to have success. Yeah. Erica says that it's really important to be fair to everyone. I do. I think that's terribly important. And, you know, it's important to tell people that you're being fair to everyone. Does that make sense? Yeah, transparency is a very popular word now. Generally speaking, when people say the word transparency, I think, oh, let's think about this. I wonder if it is, because it's kind of a catchword, like networking has become kind of a word that everybody uses for two people getting together and saying good morning. Yeah. But I do have transparency in the process, and I think you should too. Yeah. I tell people what's going to happen. I tell people about equal enforcement of speaking, about taking turns. I give a progress report sometimes to the group, oftentimes to my employer, which makes people fear me, with participants. But I tell people what's going to be on the progress report, and we discuss it. I don't just sneak bad things over to someone else just to be vent, just to be nasty. No, 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 no. I adhere to the civility rules. How about you? Yeah? Good. Because that's the idea. The idea is the civility rules. The idea is to really be able to say, look, this is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And it's going to work out fine. We're all going to reach our conclusion, reach our consensus, and go forward. It'll be good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What other kind of fear do we have besides of each other and of the leader? Mm-hmm. The next one up that I think is very, very true is that a lot of people are talking about fear of failure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And 90 and others are saying that if you're certain you will fail, you will. It's Andrew and others, the self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. People sometimes come into a group situation, a negotiation, a alternative dispute resolution, even a workshop and a seminar, and they've seen it fail before. Yeah, it didn't work. A lot of times I'm called in when things have reached kind of a nasty impasse because, I don't know, yeah, people are saying it's my specialty because they've seen me do it before and they've seen me do seminars and workshops where that happens too. I guess it kind of is my specialty. I get called in a lot when a group has already been gotten together and they're plain ordinary for one reason or another, and there's always underlying fear, they're not making it. There's animosity, they've gotten sidetracked. They're just not. They need someone to take hold and to lead them and to turn it around and stick it on the right path and go forward. It's my specialty. It's what I do. Yeah. I don't usually form the groups. A lot of times I walk in on one that's already hostile to each other. And they've gotten the idea that this is hopeless. We are going to fail. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you have that, as Muhammad and others are saying, then negativity is... Muhammad says negativity is contagious. Yeah, it is. And if you've got that, then they're on the path to failure. They are. They've got a self-fulfilling prophecy. Let's change it. Let's find out. First of all, we have to have a sincere discussion with each other, right? Yeah. And you have to make very clear that you're the new sheriff in town. You're the new leader, and you know what you're doing. Which is an interesting concept if the old leader is still a part of the group. Yeah, but they're not leading anymore. I try to restructure the group if I can before I get there. I like to have my employer, we'll call him an employer, right? My client tell me about it and tell me who's been leading. And see if we can restructure so that the failed prior leader is not going to try to poison the well. I will not know. People are talking about co-leadership. I don't like to say never, because never is a very long time. But it's very close to never. I don't do co-leadership. If you need me to come in and straighten things out, the past leader is no longer leading, no longer effective, and they've created a group dynamic that is failing for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. This is not the kind of co-leader that you would like, right? Because they're going to try to keep doing business as usual because they want to be the leader and they resent you. No, I lead. If I get brought in, we come in clean. Usually, I try to restructure the group. Usually, the failed leader is in a different group. Yeah. Or in a side, maybe a consultant capacity, right? Yeah. Because they don't know what they're doing, and they're going to try to keep doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we've got fear of failure, and those types of groups think they're going to fail. If you let them think that, they will, because they'll refuse to invest in it. Mm-hmm. And it will be a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yes, and Muhammad is correct. Negativity is contagious. I break out the 5 W's again to determine the reason that we're being negative. We talk about it as a group. The first thing I do is I straighten out the group because I can't just come in and lead them to success the way they are. If they were going to make it, they wouldn't have brought me in. They'd have made it, right? They'd have gotten there. But somehow they've gone sideways. They've gone off the track, right? And I'm here to get it straightened out. And we actually spend some time at the beginning of our relationship with me as leader and them as participants. We talk about what went wrong, but what we're going to do in the future to move forward successfully. I don't like to dwell on the past. I don't want people to point fingers. I don't want people to be rude. It violates my civility rules, right? Mm-mm. We explain all this up front. Past is the past. Let it go. Let's start new. You got a new leader? We got this under control. Let's go forward. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fear of failure. Cheryl and others, I guess so, are talking about fatalism as a personality and cultural trait. Mm-hmm. Cheryl, fatalism as a personality and cultural trait. Kind of a predisposition towards negativity, fatalism. Yeah, some people have that. They're fairly certain that the world's a big, bad, mean place and it can't be helped. Mm-hmm. We take that step by step. You can't change their basic outlook on life, not your job. You can change how they relate to the other people in the group, is your job, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fear of failure. Marshall and others are talking about the participants would rather do nothing than admit failure to the power base. Participants would rather do nothing than admit failure to the power base. They don't want the boss to think they failed, so they just kind of try to do nothing and hope it'll go away and that the idea will kind of sink on its own weight and so will the group. It'll kind of disband. If it's important enough to bring us in as leaders, it's not going to disband or go away. You might as well tell people this up front, so that they start thinking about it and thinking about how we're going to make this a success in the future. I'm big on the future, not so big on the past, if it's going to hold us back. Big on the past if it's a big example that we can use. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bobby and others are talking about the passing of blame, which is a fear of failure. I didn't fail. I didn't do it. Someone else did, which caused it to go sideways. We're going to do that. We're not going to cause it again. Mm-hmm. Now, here's an interesting fear that quite a few people are talking about, and I think it's real valid. I didn't think about it when we started, but you know this is an unscripted show, and so we have all kinds of ideas that are fabulous and we go forward with them. And I think we're going to be talking through the recipe part. I don't know, but I'll give it a try. Sometimes we don't get to the recipes, but that's okay. Here's another fear that people are talking about, which I think is very, very true. Sometimes there's a fear of success. Because we all fear failure, but a fear of success. Yeah. Hussein says that you have a fear of success because you're going to get additional responsibility that you're not sure you can handle or that you don't want. Additional responsibility. If this works out, I'm going to be busy with it. I don't see a raise coming in here. Additional responsibility. Maybe I fear success. Yeah. This is a point that Cassandra is making. Sometimes people fear success because they think that others will find out how little experience with success they have. Yeah. I'm kind of scared of success because I'm kind of scared for you to find out that I don't know what I'm doing. Because I've never succeeded before. Yeah. You know, you have to know these things. You have to you have to see if people are dragging their feet, right? Yeah. This is interesting, too. A lot of people, this is fear of success. Ellen and others are saying that sometimes people fear success because they like the process to continue. They're enjoying it. You know, we talk about a convivial atmosphere and about getting together and the civility rules and having a food in the room and like that. Sometimes people have a fear of success because they don't want the group to end. They're kind of having a nice time. It gives them something to do on Wednesday night. Yeah. They like the people, and maybe they kind of would like to be friends with somebody, and the longer the group goes, the more contact you have. And like that, yeah. Sometimes people fear for the group to end because it's fun. Yeah, it is. You get to talk about what you think. You get to do stuff together. You get to, it's like a party once a week. Yeah. Yes, it's possible to make people too comfortable. This is true. And you have to make clear that we'll go on to different issues if we're a really good group like that. Yeah. Fear of the process ending. Yeah, Thomas and others are saying sometimes there's a fear of success because they disagree with the proposed outcome, and they figure if it fails, we'll try it their way. We'll do it a different way that they are more comfortable with, right? They kind of would like to sabotage this direction so we can go in a different one because this one didn't work. This is time for a 5W questionnaire, so to speak, where you take them aside and find out what's going on. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you do have that. You have people who look like they are part of the group, but they're kind of dragging their feet for one reason or another because they're getting scared that we're going to end. We're going to get our success. And a lot of them have never had one before. Yeah. And you have to reassure people that this is good. This is why we're here. Yes. And exchange contact information, if you'd like. Sometimes, if I've got a group that has really enjoyed themselves and really, really fears success because we're going to end, workshops and seminars often, but they kind of naturally end, and then you do another series and they come back. You get like groupies, which is fabulous. I just love my return people. I love my groupies. And yeah, and then they spread the word. It's fabulous. But and I think they're all fantastic people, and they're so smart because they keep going to my workshops and seminars. Yes. You can say that we're going to get together like monthly to see if the progress is being made and to see if there's other issues that we need to tackle, right? At least for a little while, to kind of let the, not just end the group because we had success, but to let it linger because sometimes there are other issues. And a lot of times there's kind of unforeseen consequences. Yeah. And that they may need to be dealt with too, depending on the issues. So you tell people they don't have to fear not seeing each other anymore. Because if you'd like to, we can. We can do this. Mm-hmm. Other kind of fear, I'm going to call this fear of compromise, right? That Samira and others are saying that sometimes people think that compromise is weakness. It's showing weakness. Mm-hmm. A sign, it's kind of an image of weakness. Mm-hmm. And they don't want others in their group, not the group, this group, but in their, oh, their cultural, their background, their family, their employer, whoever it is. They don't want them to, they don't want to appear weak, so they're scared to compromise. And the idea is everybody has to compromise, therefore nobody's got an image of weakness. We've all had to give a little to get a little. Mm-hmm. That's the leader's job to make that clear, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Kirina and others are talking about a lot of times people have a fear of compromise because they don't want to appear weak and they also don't want to have to explain what happened to someone, that they had to give on one of the issues. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the person that they report to, the group or whatever, they need to hear it from an impartial third party who will present it in a way that makes it a success and not a compromise, right? And you either explain that to the participant who goes back and explains it to someone else, or you as leader might need to help. Mm-hmm. So that the compromise will stick and that they won't get kind of forced into an more unreasonable position, mm-hmm. because they were perceived as weak and the explanation wasn't good, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have to help with that. Mm-hmm. Interesting point that Alex and others are making. Sometimes people fear compromise because they want to be perceived as a hero. They want everybody to go, wow, he or she really, really got that done. And the answer is, yes, I did. And I'm still a hero. And we had to negotiate it, but I didn't, but I won. Everybody won. It's all good. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the last fear we're going to be talking about, and yes, I think we are going to miss the recipes this time. I apologize. We will get to both of them. Well, we'll get to probably to one of them next time. But we've had such a wonderful conversation, and we've got one more fear that quite a few people are talking about, and that is fear of change. People don't like to change very much. Even if the situation is kind of not so swell, you ever hear the expression, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know? Yeah, it probably translates into all languages because this is, of course, an international show. And that's kind of, I think, an Americanism. But it may have been translated out of a different language. The devil you know is better than the devil you don't know, right? People don't like change. They figure it might get worse. Yeah, they fear it. Mm-hmm. Sydney and others are talking about traditional organizations being somewhat more resistant to change because, quite frankly, and you've got to take this into account, they like it the way things are because they've got it pretty good, right? It suits them. Somebody has some clout, some power to be leader of that organization or leader of types of people in that organization, right? Yeah. So they fear change because it's working for them, whatever it is now. And sometimes they kind of fear the modern world, right? Especially technology change. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And compliance change. I see, well, I do some compliance work. And people are very resistant to change in the compliance world because they want to know how come they need to do Oh, this kind of a, usually it's safety measures. And they have to be told, they have to understand that they want to do it. They just didn't think of it before. But of course they do, because they don't want people to get hurt, right? Yeah. At least they don't want people, the public, the consumer usually, to perceive that they want people to get hurt and don't care. Hey, that's a negotiation point too. I am a sociopath, and I don't care if people's hands kept getting cut off in my machinery. But the consuming public cares, right? And that's going to get out in this day and age of everybody being a citizen reporter. Mm-hmm. Can't be business as usual because it can't be contained. And that's a really valid point. And that's what a lot of companies fear more than anything. They fear people knowing how awful they truly are. Yes. And so they have to, I suppose it's a facade, but they have to act like they care and want to have positive change, even though they fear it and they don't care. And that's good enough, as long as it gets done, right? Yeah. You can't require sincerity of soul. You can just require successful outcome. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, Joyce and others are talking about people fear change because they fear uncertainty, and they'd rather have a bad reality than an uncertain future, right? And that change is hard. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, this is true. People get used to things, and they'll put up with it rather than change because they're scared that ultimately it won't work out and it's uncertain and like that. Mm-hmm. Arshi and others are talking about the fact that businesses sometimes lose money, but individuals lose face. And that's the embarrassment factor and the publicity factor and the use of media. Yes, we fear change, but we fear people knowing that we fear change more than we fear change. Make sense? Yeah. Yes, Lane and others are saying that people fear change because change takes planning, deep thought, and execution. Planning, deep thought, and execution. And George and others are adding the word trust. You have to trust somebody if you're going to make a change. Yeah. That's what makes change hard. And you have to understand that it's necessary and that it will be better. And if it's not perfect when we change, that's why we have this group. That's why we've gotten together, so that we can tweak it, so that we can make it better, so that we can effectuate positive change, right? And not be scared, not have fear. My friends, we are out of time, and I fear that we're going to have to do the recipe next time. Yes. Yes. Yes, my fear is running out of time. You are correct. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to connect with us, we are at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the prior shows, they're archived on that website. Yes. And this one will be, too, in about, 5 minutes or something, technology being what it is. It just kind of shows up like magic. Fabulous. And when it doesn't work, of course, we all fear technology failing and it not being magical anymore. Yes. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming and for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.